Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Welcome, everyone, to our teleseminar today, which is called When Your Kids Push You Over the Edge. My name is Kathy Gordon. I'm a certified instructor of Parenting by Connection with Hand in Hand Parenting, and with me is one of my fellow certified instructors, Dahlia Alam. Dahlia, you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody. I'm very happy to be with you today, and I'm a certified Parenting by Connection instructor as well from Hand in Hand. I'm from Egypt. I'm Egyptian, and I'm the first one actually spreading this concept here in Egypt. Happy to be with you today.
Great. We have a lot of people who have registered for the call, and before we get to the meat of the teleseminar, I'm going to talk a bit about hand-in-hand parenting so we can let people get on the call and settle in. So hand-in-hand parenting is a nonprofit organization founded by Patty Whipler in 1989. Until 2005, it was known as the Parents Leadership Institute. Our mission is to make parenting life be what you want it to be, to give you the tools and the support you need to lift the difficulties out of your life and bring you closer to your child. Our parenting approach is called Parenting by Connection, and it's an approach that really focuses our minds and our efforts on creating and maintaining and repairing a really good connection with our children. Our approach is really different than most of what's out there, because what we find works best is really connecting with children. A child's sense of safety, which allows them to learn and thrive, depends on their feeling connected to us. So we offer 6 basic listening tools for promoting parent-child connection and for promoting good support for parents, so that we can think well and that we can be there for our children. We have 4 parent-to-child listening tools: special time, stay listening, play listening, and setting limits, and 2 parent-to-parent listening tools: listening partnerships and setting up a parent resource group or a parent study group. And the parent-to-parent listening tools are primarily what we're going to focus on for this call today. You can learn our approach and our listening tools in a myriad of ways. We have numerous free articles and success stories on the website. We have these free teleseminars. We have self-guided video classes. And then our foundational parenting tools class is called the Parenting by Connection Starter Class. When you take the starter class, you get 6 months access to the instructional videos, and you'll be part of a 6-week mentoring and support call while you're learning and practicing the tools. And I'm also excited to announce that we've created a brand new class similar to the starter class. We're now offering a parenting masterclass called the Parent Intensive, and you get the same online access to the instructional videos. Plus, this class will offer you 10 weeks of support in a weekly mentoring call. And this is a perfect course for working on persistent behavior challenges, emotional projects, and the kinds of big issues that you might not be able to tackle in a 6-week course. So we'll talk more about that course later in the call, as our next session of the Parent Intensive starts in just 2 weeks. And information about all of our resources can be found on our website, handinhandparenting.org. And we'll remind you of all that later in the call. So great. Well, we have a lot of people who've joined the call today. It's really exciting. we're going to go ahead and get started. Dahlia and I want to welcome you and thank you for being here. We know how tough it can be to arrange your schedule and childcare to commit to this hour. And whether you're with us live right now or you're listening to the recording, we really appreciate what it took for you to be here with us. We appreciate your commitment to your family, and we hope that you'll come away from this call feeling a little uplifted with some ideas and resources to make life go a little bit better for you and yours. So we're going to start by introducing ourselves. Then Dahlia's going to talk about why we lose it. What exactly is happening in our brains and our bodies when we feel like we're being pushed over the edge? Then we're going to give you a couple of specific tools for those tough times, both tools in the moment and a powerful tool to use when we first notice we're feeling tight and tense. And we're going to both share some of our own experiences using these tools, and then we should have a good chunk of time to answer some of your questions. So, as I said, my name is Kathy Gordon. I'm the single adoptive mom of a 12-year-old boy who was born in Los Angeles, where we currently live. And he was placed with me when he was 10 days old, but I didn't discover the hand-in-hand approach, parenting by connection, until my son was around 5. I'd been practicing nonviolent parenting, which is a style of unconditional empathetic parenting, but we were still struggling with a lot of tantrums, especially around bedtime. Well, I actually won a consultation with our founder, Patty Whiffler, and that hour with Patty, it changed our bedtime, changed my relationship with my son, and really changed our lives. And I'd been a teacher of one thing or another all my adult life, so when using the Parenting by Connection listening tools made such a difference in my own little family, it was only natural that I would want to share these tools with others. And thus, I became an instructor. So, Dahlia, thank you so much for being on the call with me today. Please tell us about yourself and your family.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. It's really an honor to be with you all today. As I mentioned, I'm Egyptian. I've been living in Egypt, and I'm so different from all the other instructors because I knew about hand-in-hand, or my passion about hand-in-hand started before even knowing it. I started when I was close to kids in my family. And these kids were suffering with problems with their parents. Their parents were not able to deal with them properly. And I really see how this affects their emotional state and their behavior. And I feel pity for these kids, and I wanted to be close with them. I spent a lot of quality time with them, play with them. We laughed and giggled together. And then I took a course in Egypt, which is called Passion to Profit. It's a basic course where it helps you to find your passion and how you can turn it into business. And then I find that parenting is my passion. I started to search online to study parenting, and I find hand-in-hand. I took first the emotional building understanding, which is now the Parenting by Connection started class that you just mentioned. And I was really surprised to find that these tools, like special time and listening, the right proper tools that I used to use with this kid without even know their value and without knowing how these kids were benefiting from this tool. I decided to join Parenting by Connection certification program, and during the certification, myself, I got pregnant, and now I'm a mom for a 1-year-and-a-half-old daughter. I was really, really lucky to know hand-in-hand before being a mom and to know the tools. I always say to parents that it makes a hell of a difference when you understand, when you have the proper tool from the beginning. I was lucky to have this parent support and to have listening partnership that we're going to talk about it today more from the first day of I was a mother. It really helped me a lot in managing my stress. And I would love to say here that I'm a very, very nervous person and very stressful person. And people who knows me on the personal level will never believe such a change in me, will never believe that it's me who's teaching these tools and then giving support to parents, because it really makes a difference in my life. So I want to make a difference in people surrounding me. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Dahlia.
Yeah, thank you, Kim.
Wonderful. Yeah. If I didn't mention before, Hand in Hand is an international organization, and we have instructors all over the world. And I think Dahlia, you said you are our first certified instructor in Egypt.
Yeah,
It's just so exciting that you're doing this work clear over on the other side of the globe. Just thank you so much. And I'm honored to be offering this important information to parents with you.
Yeah.
And I love that we're doing the first teleseminar of the year, of the new year. If any of you parents listening are like me, you know, the new year is that time when we like to set an intention that this year is going to be better than last, you know, especially in the area of parenting. And so, you know, I've resolved to be more compassionate, more connected, and yell less. And I don't know. I think sometimes, somehow my son, he didn't get the message. Like, he didn't get the memo because his behavior, you know, can still be frustrating. So here it is, only January 5th, and I can feel my patience starting to slip away. So, Dahlia, what's happening to us when we lose control, and why does it feel like our kids are pushing us over the edge?
Yeah. What's happening to us in the heat of the moment, in the moment that we lose ourselves, we lose our self-control, the moment that we feel like a victim, the moment that we say to ourselves, why did I become a parent? Why they are doing this to me? Yeah, you have to know that it's nothing wrong with your child. It's nothing related to your child. You have to know that's all going inside us, inside our brain. Inside our brain, we have like an emotional tape that records all incidents that happened to us since we were young. When we were little, we got hurt from our parents, when they lost control as well, when they yelled and shouted to us. And this hurt got stored inside us, inside our brain. And if we didn't cry hard about it to get it out, it will remain inside us. It will remain recorded in this tape. So let's imagine that we have like an emotional backpack carrying a lot of feelings resulted from small or big incidents we have been through. And what happened is when we became a parent, and parent is an emotional work, we never thought to do an emotional work. We usually do physical work, like cook, clean, work on computer. But parents is a different job. It's in a job full of emotion and full of challenges. We face incidents with our children similar to what happened to us when we were young. And when we face this incident, we retrieve old feelings stored in our memory, in our emotional tape. We don't feel that we are retrieving something because it's just a feeling, so we don't feel that we are getting something from the past. We have to know that all this is happening in our brain. It happened in a part of the brain which is called the limbic system, which is a part where sit up our emotion. And when this part which carry our emotion is in disarray, it's not functioning well, it does not allow another part of the brain, which is called the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible of all the thinking capabilities. And this part of the brain shut down at this moment, in the heat of the moment. We cannot think. What we need to do in this moment is we need to release our emotion. We need to release our frustration, our anger, to be able to go on track and to be able to think again and deal with our child. Yeah, to do this, hand in hand, offer a tool which is called listening partnership that we're going to talk about, that Kathy will talk about it later in detail. But to give you a brief about this, I'm going to tell you about a little story that happened to my daughter, how listening partnership really helped me to relieve my stress and to feel more calm and relaxed and energetic. Well, my husband used to travel a lot during few months ago, and I just stayed alone, taking care of my daughter all alone, 24 hours alone. I was very, very stressed and tired. And moreover, my nephew, who is 10 years old, came to spend 2 days with me. His mother was traveling, and it was too hard for me to handle two kids all alone at home. I did several listening partnership calls. I expressed freely how it was too much stressful for me to take care of two kids, and that I feel so stressed. I don't want to pass this stress to my daughter nor to my nephew. My nephew is close to me as well. I don't want him to feel that. I talked too much about this stress and the impact on me and my daughter and my nephew, and the other partner just listened with attention, with support and care, and with appreciation. And I was in deep need of appreciation. I was in deep need that someone support me and see the effort I'm doing. And after getting away all my stress and negative energy, I felt very relaxed and energetic. I was able to take care of my baby and my nephew peacefully and in a relaxed mode. And not only that, I started to enjoy it too. And I really want to tell you here that I used to live with my nephew before I got married for 10 years in the same home. I used to live with him and his mom, and he was surprised because he told me that I became a different person. I became quiet, and I'm not the nervous person that I used to be before when I was living with him. So this was a great achievement for me.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you, Dahlia. Wonderful. Thank you for that wonderful explanation of what's happening inside us when we get re-stimulated by our own childhood hurts. And I just love that story. Thank you for sharing how listening partnerships made such a difference for you, particularly when you were a brand new parent. And at Hand in Hand, you know, we do many seminars and offer classes on how to help our kiddos with their off-track behavior. You know, we offer connection and then listen to our child, understanding that when we give them the chance to offload their feelings, we'll get happy, cooperative, thinking children back. And in fact, I'm actually doing a teleseminar next Tuesday. It's a half an hour later, starting at 11:30, called Get Your Kids to Listen. And that teleseminar is going to be focusing all on our kids' behavior when they go off track. This teleseminar are really focusing on when we go off track. So the same is true for us about, you know, with our kids, we offer connection and listen to them and, you know, understanding when they unload their emotional backpack, then they're going to be able to think well again. And Dahlia, you explained beautifully how we can use the support of a listening partner. Because when we are supported and resourced, we think better, we respond better, we have more patience, we can be more playful and creative in our parenting, and we can be there for our children, able to listen to them and help them get back on track. And Dahlia, you gave us a wonderful example of how you used your listening partner to release all that stress you were feeling. So I want to explain to everyone how this peer-to-peer support tool works. It can seem a little unusual or different than anything you've done before. And so I'm going to ask you to sort of, it's one of those things like where someone says, oh, come on, jump in, the water's fine. So to kind of keep that perspective about it, that, you know, try it, you'll like it. So very simply, you ask someone to listen to you without interrupting for a finite amount of time, maybe 15, 20, or 30 minutes, and you'll need to set a timer. And your partner has promised not to interrupt and not to give advice. So their job, while they're listening to you, is to give you their warm attention, just like we give our kids our warm attention when we listen to them. Now, that can be tricky because normally when we listen to people, we're either thinking about what we might say that connects us, in other words, similar experiences, or we're listening for how we might help them. But when we're doing listening partnerships, we listen without judgment or advice. So it can be helpful to think such thoughts about our partner as, you are good. Everyone you're talking about is good. You're going to figure this out. If we're thinking those warm, loving thoughts as we're listening, that can help us keep our mind away from the judging or helping or looking for similar experiences that we normally do when we're listening to people. Now, what that warm attention does as the person talks stream of consciousness about their old hurts, That allows them to laugh, to cry, to shake, sweat, and yawn as they offload that stress and those old hurts that get in the way of thinking well about ourselves and our children. And as Dahlia said, it's so good to feel appreciation in the middle of feeling stressed and alone. Now, there's one other promise or agreement that we make. Before we listen to our partner, we've promised that we'll not refer to anything they say ever again. We won't ask them for clarification. they may jump around as they're talking, talk about something in the past, and then talk about something in the future. It's not important. We don't need to know the details, so we don't ask for clarification. And the next time we meet, we won't ask them how that situation is going. We promise that whatever they share in listening time is held sacred and will never be referred to again. And this promise to not refer is what makes the relationship safe for both people and is one of the most important guidelines of listening partnerships. Then when the timer goes off and the first person's finished, you switch and you listen to the other person for the same amount of time. And if the person has, the person you're listening to has maybe really expressed a lot of emotions and they're really kind of in that feeling place, then it can be useful before you switch to ask them some kind of silly little detailed question like name the color of the rainbows or spell your Los Angeles backwards or something like that that helps them get their attention up and out so they can listen to you. Excuse me. So I'll tell you a quick little story about one of my experiences with listening partnerships. Because of my son's prenatal trauma, he's had a lot of challenges. And when he was younger, he had a tough time with transitions, becoming easily frustrated and even aggressive. Using the Parenting by Connection listening tools have really helped me to set limits, keep us safe, and listen to his deep feelings of fear and sadness. And transitions have become much easier for him. But when I first started using the tools, it was really hard for me to listen to him. He would start to throw things, and I would lose it. Because my father was a thrower. He would fly into a rage and throw things. He would snarl, yell, kick the dog, kick the garbage can, throw your books or shoes at you if you left them in the kitchen. So as Dahlia explained, I had a lot of fear from my own childhood stored up in my limbic system or my emotional backpack. Every summer, Hand in Hand has a retreat for parents in Santa Cruz in the mountains of California. And for 3 days, you get access to lots and lots of listening time. And I was committed to working on my knee-jerk reaction to my son's anger. I really wanted to be there for him because I know an aggressive kid is a scared kid. So using my listening time that weekend to really vent about my father, how scary it was, how it wasn't my fault that he was so mad, I got to yell, sweat, tremble, laugh, and cry hard a lot. When I came home, I was able to see my son in a different light. I had found more patience. I was particularly able to be more playful. He would start to throw something, and I could turn it playful by blocking him with a blanket or even tackling him with some rough and tumble play. Now, intellectually, I knew that my son was not my father. But knowing that in the thinking part of my brain and knowing it in my limbic system, those are two different things. As Dahlia explained, when we have those old hurts in our limbic system or our emotional backpack, we don't have access to the thinking part of our brain. Now, where or how do you find a listening partner? I think the best way to experience listening partnerships and have built-in listening partners is by taking one of our online classes, where you meet in a small group with an instructor every week. But you can also post that you'd like to find a partner on our Yahoo discussion group. And more information about both of those options will be in the follow-up email that you receive with a with a link to the replay of this seminar. But, you know, it's not always possible to stop and call your listening partner. So, Dahlia, what can you do in the heat of the moment when you can't stop or a listening partner is not available?
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. I personally face a lot of times that I cannot find my listening partner or cannot arrange because my life is too busy. So there is a lot of things that you can do that you can help yourself for your child. You know, I love what Patty said, that in this heat of the moment, we need to have an emotional poop. We need to release our emotion. It's most important not to get it to our children because this will affect them. They will feel responsible for such feeling. So what I really love to do is that I love to do some physical movement. I go into my room alone and I yell and scream. Yeah, I kick my leg and I hit a pillow. I do all that to get the anger out of me. Or you can just lay down on the floor, because laying on the floor will really help you to relax. You know, when my daughter has faced sleeping problem, I leave her in her bed and I just lay on the floor. And she cried, I cried, but I feel it's okay. I cannot take it anymore. I cannot help her. I'm helping myself And later on, I would be back on track for her. But now I'm just trying to relax. Yeah. And another thing, that you can take your time out. You can separate yourself from your child until you calm down. You can go to a spot where you can sit alone and relax until you are back on track, until your prefrontal cortex, when the part of the brain that can think again, is open, and then you can think again and deal with your child. Oh, I'm just waiting for this moment when my daughter will grow up, and you can agree with her, with your child, that when you are out of control, you can tell her and explain to her that it's nothing related to you. I just need to be alone. I just need help. In this moment, I cannot talk with you, and I cannot be a good mom, not right at the moment. You can just please hug me when I face moment. Or you can ask her to go and get a gift for you, something that she bought for you, and or anything that needs to remind you of her love, of your child's love. Yeah, or you can agree with your child that here's a list of my friends when I'm angry and when I lost my control. Can you please call one of these friends? And you can go, even if your friend is not there, even there is an answer machine, you can express your anger and scream to your friend instead of screaming to your child. So I love this small tip so that you can be really helpful and useful in the heat of the moment where you cannot find your listening partner.
Yeah, thanks, Saya. Those are all great ideas. And Patty's written a wonderful article called Crazy Mad, When Your Kids Push You Over the Edge. And in that article, she suggests that we rehearse some of those plans with our kiddos. You know, we all do fire drills. So this would be an emotional emergency drill. And, you know, Patty says you might do a light rendition of an upset in the kitchen with your children right there, a comic, tiny voiced imitation of an anger moment without using serious words. So you might say something like, "You cabbage, why are you so hard to cut? You're supposed to be softer. I'm so upset with you, you green cabbage, you." And then you say, "Now I'm going to my upset spot and let go of these feelings." And you march off to your spot in a lighthearted way, and then with humor, jump up and down or beat on the bed, and then say, "Ah, I feel much better," and then give all your kids a hug. And you do this playful drill a few times, and then in real life, if you find something that mildly upsets, so you and your children get some practice before you really do go off the deep end, you know, that's also a time to do it. When you're just a tiny bit frustrated, just look for those opportunities to practice going to your upset spot and as Dahlia said, like jumping on the bed or kicking, at a time where you can still be a little lighter about it so that your kids understand when you're not, and they're not scared when you really need to do it. And you might ask them whether they want you to leave the door open or close it when you go to your upset spot. You could try it both ways so they can make their choice. And, you know, when they get the hang of it, your children may tell you, it's time to go to your upset spot, and it can be maddening, but it really helps. And I think this practice is very powerful because we're creating a culture in our family where it's okay to have big feelings and to release them. And my son will often tell me, "I need to go get some listening time." So we've shared with you some ideas of what you can do in the moment when you're reaching the edge, and the magical power of listening partnerships in helping us heal those old hurts so that we don't get pushed to the edge so often. Now, we'd love to take some of your questions. And if you have a question, you can press *2. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can. We have until about 7 to 5 minutes before the hour, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can. So if you have a question, just press *2, and that will raise your hand. We have, I don't have a name here, but it says there's a long number that ends in 1303. I've unmuted you.
Yeah.
130. Yeah.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering, so they're all really great suggestions for how to take some time out for yourself when you have time to do that, but I often find myself in a situation where everyone needs to leave the house and it's all, you know, that's when it all kind of kicks off because my toddler is refusing to get his shoes on and he's like lying flat on the floor, kicking his legs, and I need to get everybody out to like do the school run or whatever. So in that moment, I find myself kind of losing control and just kind of yelling at everybody. So how can you kind of take a step back when the time pressure is on?
Yeah. That's a good one. So there's a couple things. And tell me your name.
Emily,
thanks. Great question. I'm sure there's very many other people on the call that have that same thought, like, oh, you know, we need to run out the door. So I think there's a couple of things you can do. One is, in the moment, if there's any way you can reach for playfulness and, like, start singing, you know, singing in your best opera voice, come on, it's time to get out the door, you know, and if you can reach for playfulness in the moment, you can really diffuse that power struggle that's starting to brew. And you know, when our playfulness can also help break through some of our frustration as well. So that's, you know, so anything you can do like that, or like decide you're going to put your shoes on your ears, anything to get your kids laughing. And actually the whole call next Tuesday is going to be all about these kinds of ideas, things you can do with your kids to when they're in that moment and you're saying, come on, we get out the door, and nobody's listening to you. So play is, being playful is one of the best ways, I think, to help us get back on track and kind of diffuse the power struggle and get, you know, and connect with our kids in a way that now it becomes a little bit lighter and easier to get out the door. So that's something you can try in the moment. It can be really useful if you don't have a listening partner, just grab a friend and see if you could practice some of those ideas, sort of like a little improv session with your friend. Like, what are the most ridiculous things that you could say or do trying to get your kids out the door in the moment? So, you know, so you have some things in the back of your mind that you can practice. And then the other thing I would suggest is, since you know that that's a persistent, consistent kind of difficult time, you know, this is, again, what the call next Tuesday is going to be all about, is that, you know, our kids have the most difficulty doing what we ask them to do when they're feeling disconnected. And so building some, like starting your day a few minutes earlier so that you're building some play and connection time into your day before you try to get everybody out the door is also something you can do, because, you know, we can take a step back and look at the patterns of our day and like, oh, this is always a rough spot. You know, getting out of the house in the morning is always a rough spot. Getting home from school in the afternoon is always a rough spot. So building in connection and play in those rough spots so that we've planned to do that, then we don't get so, you know, we don't get pushed so, you know, to our limit. Yeah?
Yeah, thank you. That's really helpful.
Yeah. Great. Dahlia, did you want to add anything or?
No, thank you. That was Kathy, yeah. And that was lovely. And I really like this idea of playful, because I do it a lot with my daughter, and I know it's not easy. It's not easy in the heat of the moment to do this, because sometimes we even forgot this tool, we forgot to be playful. But I keep saying that when you do it once and when you see the impact, you're gonna believe in it and you're gonna practice it more and more.
Great. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I'm gonna put my shoes on my ears tomorrow.
Yeah, great. Yay. Let us know how it goes. And somebody from San Francisco.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Natalie. Hi. One of the areas that I find myself being triggered by is it's a really hard time, actually, for me to stay calm in, is when my kids are tantruming. Mm-hmm. And so it may be a tantrum, I mean, over anything. It could be food-related or just any tiny thing. But when they start to lose it and they're already in their fight-or-flight mode and they're screaming, I find myself getting extremely angry. And I know that that's the time I need to remain calmer. And so I'm being triggered in that moment, and I'm, you know, recalling a lot of emotional baggage of how I was treated during when I was tantruming as a child. And I don't know how to release and also stay calm in the same time. So I'm sort of in a really hard position, and that's when things tend to blow up. I feel like I'm caught in a rock in a hard place at that time, and what I really need to do is let go of a lot of that frustration and that anger and get back into my thinking brain. But it's specifically at that time that my kids need me the most. And and that's the time I feel the furthest away from them. So
tell me your name.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm sorry, tell me your name.
My name is Natalie, and my kids are 2 and 4.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Great. Thanks, Natalie. And sorry, I interrupted your question. You were about to ask
And one final question is that I noticed that Dahlia was saying that she, you know, if she feels compelled to cry, she can do so in front of her children. And I just wonder if that's appropriate and at what age is that appropriate for your kids. And I have sort of shied away from allowing them to see me cry. Because I feel like that might be traumatic for them. So I don't know if that's appropriate because my kids are only 2 and 4 years old. So.
Right. Yeah. I think, Natalie, it's just really wonderful that you are in touch with that, you know, this is coming, that anger is coming from, you know, how you were treated. Like, that's like the first step. And that is exactly... I mean, again, it's one of those things like if anyone is shy or resistant to the idea of a listening partnership, it's one of those things like Dahlia was saying, like if you try it, it's amazing, the being able to cry about that, vent about that, you know, how we were treated as children. The best way I can describe it is that your experience as a child and the feeling have gotten stuck together. So in listening partnerships, we let go of the feeling. We still have the experience of when we were a child. We still, you know, have those memories, but we're, the feeling, the fear, and hurt, or it's no longer connected to the memory, so we don't get re-stimulated. So that is the magic of listening partnerships. And as to what to do in the moment, it's taken me a long time to heal some of the stuff from my childhood to be able to be present with my son. But the suggestion that Dahlia made about laying down, it can be the most powerful thing that we can do instead of getting angry. So, you know, Patty talks a lot about, you know, understanding as parents what we can control and what we can't control. And, you know, in that moment, we're not thinking, and we can't really control it. We can't really be there for our kids because of how re-stimulated we've gotten. So laying down on the floor and you know, letting them sit on either side of you and cry is like the and, you know, just trying to keep, if there's some physical stuff going on, just trying to keep children safe, you know, is really the best thing that it's the most we can do in that moment. And as to your question, and Dai, I'll ask if you have any thoughts about this, about crying in front of your children.
Yeah.
Ideally is to take it to your listening partner. Sorry, Dai, I was going to say this and then open, you know, the floor to you, but ideally is to take it to your listening partner. That's the ideal place to be able to cry and rant and rave and, you know, but laying down on the floor and crying and saying to your kids, it's, you know, mommy's okay. I'm just releasing my, you know, I'm just releasing my, my feelings. It's okay. It's not your fault. You know, is much better than screaming at them, you know, so thinking of like which is less harmful. Laying down on the floor and you crying is way better than screaming at them. My son hit me in the face with a football completely by accident, and it hurt so much that I actually sat down and let the tears come. And he's like, Mom, are you okay? And he felt so awful. And I said, sweetie, it's okay. You know, through my tears, I said, it's okay. You know, I'm releasing the hurt. You know, by crying, I'm releasing the hurt. And it's okay. I know it was an accident. It's not your fault. But I knew that I needed to cry, or I wasn't sure that I'd be able to continue playing football with him, or I'd be scared that I'd get hit again. So, Dalia, yeah, do you want to say about crying in front of your kids?
Yeah, and I feel it's, you know, it's totally fine, because we are helping our children to deal with the emotion later on. We are a role model for them, so they will know that there are moments as well they will face, they will be off track, and by handling our feeling, we are helping them to that they can handle their feeling as well later on. All this, they will be stored in their memory and they will learn from it. So it's okay to tell them that life is like ups and downs, and now we are in the down, and we are aware of this, and we are trying to deal with our emotions. So, yeah. I mean, that's, I want to say that we are their role model, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Natalie, try lying down in the midst when you start to feel that big feeling. You know, it's the best thing we can do when we start to feel out of control. And like the only way that I could, you know, change the situation is if I started yelling or if I started spanking. When we start to feel that way, instead of trying to make something happen by being harsh with our children, laying down and shedding some tears, I think is the very best thing you can do in that moment for everybody. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll try that.
Great. Awesome. Yeah, and let us know how it goes, and feel free to email either one of us to, you know, to hook you up with a listening partner, because, again, it's one of those, like, it's, you got to try it to see the value of it, but it's very, very powerful. It's really the most powerful. I don't think I could have parented my adopted son with all of his stuff without regular listening partnerships. So great. Thanks for your question. It's a good one. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, okay. Somebody had a question, but they had to go. We have a few more minutes for any questions, even if it's not a question specifically about, somebody from Washington, Virginia. Oops.
Yes, hi there. My name is Jenna.
Hi, Jenna.
Hi. I have a 4-year-old daughter. Lately we've been, and perhaps this is more appropriate for next week's conversation, but
you can give us a preview, or we'll.
Yeah, right. Lately we've seen some increased aggression during tantrums, you know, where, you know, she'll hit or, you know, just get so angry, and it's sort of, you know, a couple months sort of, you know, of an issue, not something that we've always seen with her tantrums. And so we're kind of
you know, we're trying to sort of figure out how best to, you know, to handle it. I'm new to the whole parenting by connection, and I haven't yet done one of the classes and things, but I'm interested to learn more about it. So we've tried, you know, time out and some of those things, and that just seems to exacerbate the issue, which I understand it. And so we're trying to get away from that, but I guess my question is more in the moment when she is having a tantrum and lashing out, kind of, you know, I know keeping our cool is kind of the, you know, the first step, and that's a challenge, but then kind of how to calm her down, or let her, you know, express herself too.
Great. Thank you. And, we're perfectly happy to answer any questions today.
Thank you.
So let me ask you if there's been any changes in her routine, in her school, and what have you been traveling more, any illness, anything happened recently that you would call a change?
I mean, in September, she started going to the same school that she went to last year, but, you know, a different class, a four-year-old class, and it's a five morning a week class, so that's a change from last year. Although she expresses lots of positivity about the class and everything, so, and going to school, and there's never an issue to go to school. So on the surface, you know,
right,
sure,
it seems fine.
You know, it seems okay, but, you know, there could be underlying stress about having to do that.
So the reason I ask that is because we look at aggression as like a physical expression of fear. So
right.
An aggressive child is a scared child. So on the one hand, it's really great that whatever anxiety that she's feeling, maybe about being in school 5 days a week, so that's more time away from you, or,
right.
You know, or being, like, there's more expectations for her now. There's more, because they're probably, they might be adding in a little bit more academics, or, you know, expecting her to
right.
sit in circle time a little bit longer, all of those sorts of, you know, so whatever anxiety she's feeling about that, the good news is, she feels safe at home to express it with you, and she's not lashing out at school. So that's
right.
The good news.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly
that's the really good news. And the good news is, too, is that she's working on it. This is the thing that's so brilliant about our brains, and particularly our limbic system, is, like, we don't like carrying around that stuff in our emotional backpack. So we are always looking for a pretext or a reason. You know, you stub your toe and it doesn't hurt very much, but it's the perfect opportunity to throw yourself down on the ground and cry about the accident that you had last week, or the, you know, or the bill that got lost and you didn't pay it, or whatever, you know, or the traffic ticket, you know, that's the perfect, like, that's a pretext, right? So what you're seeing at home is that she's using every opportunity, any limit that you set, any transition as an opportunity to get that anxiety up and out. That's all good. So there's a couple things you can do. One is that on the other side of the, you know, like the rest of her day, you can build in more connection and more safety. So we have a tool called Special Time where you give your kids undivided attention for a finite amount of time. You follow their lead so that they're the ones that are in the power seat. You do whatever they want to do for that 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And so it's a confidence, it's a connection building, it's a confidence building, it's a safety building tool. So whenever kids are expressing anxiety through their tantrums, or, you know, ramping up the special time, like making sure that you're doing special time in the morning before she goes to school, and special time right when she gets home from school, and, you know, just more little bits of special time throughout the day is going to help fill up her connection cup and her safety cup so that she's able to process that anxiety, so that she feels more confident in school and she doesn't, there's not as much anxiety, right? And then the other thing is that when she does have a meltdown and gets physical, it's just about allowing her to physically express it in a way that everyone stays safe. So for example, you might kind of sit behind her and let her thrash and kick her legs and try to kick her so she's getting it out physically, but she's not hurting you because you're behind her and you're keeping everybody safe. Or, as my son got older, I got these trifold mats so that I could gently encircle him with a mat, not like holding him down, but just the mat just between him and I, between the two of us, so that he could pummel the mat and so that he wasn't hurting me, you know.
Yes.
So letting her get it up and out in a way that keeps everybody safe. And then the third step is that you working on your feelings about, oh, my God, is she going to be like this at 15, you know.
Right.
And just understanding that this is all good, that you can help create more safety and connection through special time, you know, and really just understanding that this is healing, that she's looking to dump this stuff out of her emotional backpack so that she doesn't take it to school.
Yes.
Yeah. So all good.
Thank you so much. Those are great suggestions.
Yeah. Good. Let's see. We have somebody. The last four digits are 4832. It says 2614832. 01-892-261.
Hi, that's me, it's Joanne.
That's you, great.
Hello. Firstly, can I just say, I know we're running out of time, but firstly, it's just so wonderful to be talking to people who are on the same wavelength. It's just, I have this lovely warm feeling going through me, even though we're talking about a challenging subject. I only came across Hands in Hand maybe the last couple of years. I've got 9 and 4-year-old boys, so a 5-year gap, and certainly in the early years with my eldest son, sometimes, so I kind of just kind of, without wanting to sound cliched, followed my heart and kind of did a lot of the things you guys seem to be advocating, with a lot of the time and a lot of family and friends going, basically, you shouldn't be doing that, and I'm so glad I kind of stuck at it. Obviously, I've made loads of mistakes along the way, but it's just so nice to kind of sometimes get a bit of support and think, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not the only person who thinks this is the route to go down. But anyhow, my question is quite a specific one. Going back to the lying down idea, I really like that idea. I just wondered if you had any tips in practice for how that would work with a very physical 4-year-old who, I think from experience, if I try and just sit quietly and have a moment, would literally jump on top of me.
Yes.
Dahlia, you want to jump in, or should I take it because I have a 9-year-old, I mean a 12-year-old.
I have a little bit of one year and a half. So, yeah, sometimes she's crying or she feels strange that I'm doing this, but I just tell myself that I'm keep myself away from her. I'm just telling myself I will keep myself far. But for a 4 years old, it's a bit different. So you can tell more, Kathy, from your experience.
I'm sorry, tell me your name, and if you Joanne. Joanne, I probably didn't start trying it until my son was a little bit older, maybe 7, 8, 9 in there, you know. So for him, it was, I mean, I've actually done it. I did it in a parking lot one time because it was a kind of situation where he was not running away in a way that was unsafe, but like he wouldn't let me get close to him, and he was 9 then, I think. And I just laid down right next to our car in the parking lot because I felt so powerless. And within a few minutes, he came back over begging me to get up in a way of like, oh, Mom, please, please don't do this. Please don't do this. But what it did was that it diffused the power struggle that we were having. So I think what's great about it is that it's a sort of like a little break in the action. Like, yes, it will cause your daughter to shift, and she may shift in a way where she comes over and sits on top of you. But the other thing that happens is that it allows us to shift, even in just a few 30 seconds, it allows us to shift like an acknowledgement of like, I give up. I'm going to start screaming or yelling here, so I just give up. And once something shifts in us, then I think, you know, like I've had with my son, sort of playfulness starts, and there's lots of anecdotes on the, you know, is that on the website about this laying down, is that then, you know, your kiddo comes over and, because what they want to do is they want to connect anyway. All that off-track behavior is driven by a need to connect. So, you know, it's hard for us to see it because, you know, we're trying to get them to do something. And they're asking for connection in the most off-track way. In fact, it looks like they're not asking for connection because they're screaming, go away or leave me alone or, you know. And so laying down, it makes the possibility of connection, you know, it opens up the possibility for connection. Does that help?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Because I think what will happen is that when you give yourself permission to give up and lay down on the floor, then you'll be in a different place to, like, be able to maybe, you know, dance with however she shifts. At least that's been my experience and the experience of, you know, some of the, that I read about some of the anecdotes on the website. So.
Okay, well, we're back to school after Christmas break tomorrow, so I may be putting it into effect.
Awesome. Great. So I've let us go a little bit long, and I see there's a question from New York City. I need to close out the call for the recording, but Dahlia and I will stay on the call to answer your question if you want to hang out or anybody else that has a question. But we need to just do this little closing here for the recording, which will take probably about, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes. So let's see. So I'll do this little closing, and then Dahlia and I will stay on the line. For all of you listening today or to the recording, we do hope that we've given you some ideas of what to do in the heat of the moment and how to get some regular ongoing support. We know this is just an hour call and that these wonderful tools take practice, so we'd love to continue to work with you and support you. I mentioned we've created the new Parenting Masterclass, the Parent Intensive, and that starts the week of January 25th. And, again, it's the perfect structure for a parent who's struggling with their own big feelings or whose kids may be having a tough time. As I mentioned, you'll get the 10 weeks of support and coaching as you learn to use all of the listening tools. And then you'll get weekly listening time with an experienced instructor and The course is designed to empower a parent to turn around tough family dynamics and work through and shift persistent, difficult behavior. And when you receive the playback for the call, there'll be a link to find out more about the Parent Intensive and all our wonderful materials and resources. Or you can connect with me directly through Hand in Hand website or on my Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Kathy Gordon. That's Kathy with a K, and then it's G-O-R-D-O-N. In addition to being one of the four instructors leading the Parent Intensive, I offer the Parenting by Connection Starter class online through Hand in Hand, and my next class starts on Tuesday, February 16th at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and runs for 6 weeks, so you can consult with me privately. If you're in L.A., I offer classes in person, including a free seminar for foster adopt parents that's coming up on Thursday, January 21st. And I also just got I'll be talking about setting limits at a preschool here near LAX on Tuesday the 19th. And that info will be on our website and our newsletter and on my Facebook page. And, Dahlia, how can parents reach you, particularly parents living near you in Egypt?
Yeah, you can still reach me through Hand in Hand website as well. You'll have my name there. And you can reach me through my Facebook page, which is Dahlia Alam, Hand in Hand Parenting. Dahlia is D-A-L-I-A, and Alam is A-L-A-M. I'm offering classes in person here in Egypt. I go in several locations to make it easier for the parents to come because we have a very bad traffic here. And if you want, you can email me through my Facebook or through Hand in Hand. As Kathy said, if you want to practice LP, I would be happy to offer it for any one of you. And I really want to thank you, Kathy, for your time and effort in doing this seminar for me and your support to me and to this parent. And it was really, really a pleasure to be with you today, Kathy, and with all of you.
Yeah. Thank you, Dahlia. The work you're doing is wonderful and so exciting. And thank you for taking the time away from your family and your work to join me. It's been an honor working with you. And our connection, our collaboration, I think is a great example of how Hand in Hand is building bridges throughout the world between different countries and, you know, different cultures. And so wherever you are in the world, please do explore our website. We offer so many resources. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization. We depend on your donation to provide free services like this parenting call, our free parent discussion group, and scholarships for classes and instructor training. And it's easy to donate. Any amount helps. Just click on the donate button on the website and give what you can. And together we can support parents everywhere. And with that, we'll wrap up the call. Although, as I said, we'll stay on for a few minutes to answer some more questions. Dahlia, you want to say goodbye to everybody? Or?
Yes, I want to say goodbye, and it was a really pleasure to be here. And I see that I'm sure from all of your questions that you are all great parents, and I can see your effort. And we all lose it, but we all get back on track. So I'm really happy with your effort, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you all for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed our teleseminar. It's been wonderful to have you here with us. We really appreciate your leadership, your commitment to your families, and any children with whom you may work. And we'd love for you to keep in touch and let us know how it's going. Well, great. We still have a couple questions. So from New York City.
Hi, thank you so much for all of your incredible insights and your time today and walking through all of our questions and staying late. I really appreciate that. My name is Charlene. I have two boys, 4 and 2.5, and I guess I kind of have two related questions. because they're so close in age, they can just feed off of each other and get so silly, and they literally will just something, I can't figure it out, I still haven't figured it out, something will trigger them where they just start to get goofy and they scream and run around the house and I cannot get them to stop. And the reason it's a problem, I mean, it's, I think if we lived in a house, I wouldn't really, I'd be like, all right, you guys, you know, go run and be silly. provided you're being safe, but we have neighbors that complain all the time that live below us about the noise that they create. And so it becomes this really tense moment where it's like, shit, I got to get them to stop as soon as I can. And so the problem is that if I try to approach them, it almost ignites it further. Like if I look at them and I'm like, hey guys, stop, and they just go crazy. And so I don't know how to sort of stop that. And in a similar vein, when it's nap time for my 4-year-old, he'll do almost anything to not go to bed. Like he'll actually sit and scream in my ear as I'm trying to settle him down to not, I mean, just get so wound up and not quiet down and settle down for nap time to the point where I've had to say, I'm going to leave your room. If you do that again, I can't have you hurt my ears. It really hurts. And he'll just start laughing and like he'll think it's a game. And it is infuriating because they don't do this when their father's home. And so I don't know what to do.
And I'm sorry, tell me your name again because there were barking dogs when you were, you said your name.
Charlene.
Charlene. Okay, great. Charlene. Right. Thank you. Great questions. You're in a tough situation being in an apartment with two ruckus boys. Do you live in the city, in New York City?
In Brooklyn, yeah.
You live in Brooklyn, yeah. Okay. So, so I have a couple of ideas. One is that, see if you can notice, I mean, I know that you say that it just seems to come out of nowhere, but there might be a pattern. So just kind of think about that for a few days or like, you know, when, you know, does it seem to happen maybe when bedtime's too late or maybe when they just come home from school or is there any kind of a pattern here so that you could, you know, I mean, it's one of the things that boys really need is a lot of rough and tumble play. And they need to get all that energy out. And so you may have to, living in an apartment, become creative about when and how you do that. Do you go to the park for an hour after school and just run, you know? Do you put them in gymnastics, you know?
It tends to be in transitions. So if we're moving from dinner time to let's sit and have, you know, some quiet story time or let's move from story time to let's brush our teeth time, it's those moments where it's like moving from one thing to the next where they're like, ah!
Yeah, it's great. It's great that you're already noticing that. So, there's a couple of things you can do. One of which is that you can have a family meeting where you talk about, hey, guys, you know, I've noticed that we live in an apartment, there's people around us, and I've noticed that whenever we move from one thing to another, like that you guys like to make a lot of noise. Can you come up with some ideas of how we could move from one place thing to another really quietly? And your boys are old enough that they could at least come up with some ideas. And it has to be a very, like, any idea works, any idea goes kind of family meeting, okay? That's a big picture idea. In the moment, I'm going to refer to Larry Cohen, who has a great expression. He says you have to get in it to transform it. So just off the top of my head, what I was thinking is that if you – decide that for when you go transition from story time to brush teeth, that you all do it in slow motion, right? And you do it very slowly, or you do it like you have to do it so that nobody can hear you, you know, so since you know that they need help with transitions, that you are going to be the master of the playful way you're going to transition in a way that's very quiet or a way that still allows their creativity and their goofiness, they're going to be challenged to talk in slow motion. oh, you have to talk in slow motion. You know, now, you know, it might be that you still might get the screaming or the silliness, but, you know, but at least this is a plan, you know.
And then, even
you know,
slightly more controlled.
And because, you know, and somewhere in here you have this family meeting and you throw out a whole bunch of ideas, you know, maybe you belly crawl from the living room to your, to the bathroom to, you know, but you're going to provide them with some playful way to get from one thing to another, that doesn't seem to have the same wildness to it that you, that's happening now. You know, then you're also going to provide other times where they do get to be wild and crazy. I mean, I know weather's not great there now, but maybe you, you know, throw on your coats and you all like go outside and scream as loud as you can, you know, and then you come back in, you know, so they get 2 minutes, you set the timer, they get 2 minutes to scream as loud as they can. And then you come in and you do everything in slow motion. So Larry Cohen's book is a wonderful, wonderful resource for, like his book, Playful Parenting, is just anecdote after anecdote after anecdote. You know, you can also go to our website and just put in the word play. And, you know, I'm not that creative when it comes to play, so I'm a great believer in stealing other people's ideas.
Totally.
You know, and then, you know, and transitions are difficult for everyone, for people in general, but particularly for children, because it's the ending of something, and our nervous system doesn't know that there's something to look forward to on the other side. All it feels is the ending, you know, and so then you get this nervous, anxious energy because endings in our nervous system are pretty, feel pretty close to death, you know, you know, I'm not saying that that's, you know, what they're intellectually feeling, but in our nervous system, it's very scary to go through a transition. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That makes a lot of
cool.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Dahlia, anything you want to add? I don't know if you, do you live in a small place or?
Yeah, you know, yeah, no, I think that was great, Kathy, because I love these play things, and as I said, I used to do a lot of play even before I was aware that the play has this magic. And but I know it's not easy, you know. I used to do this before I became a mom, but when you are a mom, when you are stressed, it's not never easy in the heat of the moment to do it.
Yeah,
it's really hard, but yeah, but you know, just when you start to see your kids laughing. You know, you will change. This will change your mood because, as Larry Cohen said in his book, that you there's a hormone being generated in your brain, and this hormone helps you to relax as well. So this is not only will help your child; it will help you as well. You will it helps you to relax, and maybe you can think better and have greater idea later on.
Yeah.
So what is happening? I mean, do you think I should just join them? I mean, there's been times when I thought, well. Screw it. If you guys are going to just scream and be wild, I'm going to join you and see what you do and just try to make it more of a funny thing than like a you have to stop doing this right now thing.
Yes, absolutely. Again, you have to get in it to transform it. So if you join them, you know, if you join them, then it, and you could even, you know, there's the joining of them is so because if you're standing on the outside and you're saying stop this, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, you know, it's
totally.
It's exercising futility. It's frustrating for us, but if you get in it, then you can transform it and you can see if you can, you know, if you can make it. Move into something that's a little, that's maybe just as silly, but a little quieter. You know, and then the other thing I would say about the, so bedtime as a whole, again, bedtime is a whole other thing, bedtime is also a transition. So it creates a lot of anxiety in kids because it's the end of connection and play. So endings can be very difficult. So the things you can do about bedtime are, again, are, you know, if you did special time with each of your boys before bedtime, then their connection cups are full, and then they might be, you know, my bedtime with my son, our bedtime with my son when he was about, that's when I had that consultation with Patty, and I went from the kind of routine of two books, lights out, which he had a tantrum every single night, I made our whole evening seamless with connecting from like piggyback rides to the tub, and then piggyback rides back to the bed, and then a pillow fight on the bed, and then I would put on music and turn out the light and say, okay, you know, sweetie, it's lights out, and he would crawl up in my lap and he'd fall asleep in about 15 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. It was just the sweetest time of the day. But that was all because his connection cup was full, and we were playing our way through the transitions. We were connected and we were playing through the transition of bedtime. So being mindful of that around bedtime can be really, it might help transform your bedtime as well.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Great point. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. So I think we have, good. We have, Bodhi. Oops. Bodhi. Is that Bodhi Wright? Oh, hang on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, there you go. Sorry, I'm
Hi.
So sorry. I undid your hand. I took your hand away, your raised hand, but I forgot, but I didn't unmute you. So, yes. Hey, hi.
Hi, thank you for staying late. I appreciate that. So I want to go back to what you had said regarding aggression. I'm a single mom of a nearly four-year-old boy. And, you know, you had said, an aggressive child is a scared child. Mm-hmm. And I've been working with him, and I have taken the foundation course about 6 months or so ago. I've been working with him with his physical outbursts that feel terribly personal to me. I don't know if that is symptomatic of like, yes, I've done something that has really you know, harmed him at a core level, and that's why it's directed at me, or if it's just, you know, that he's safest with me and feels that this is, you know, a container for him to process through stuff. I'm also wondering if you feel that it is important to know, like, what has frightened them so much that they reach for these gestures, you know, as a method of healing.
Right. Okay. Is your name Bodhi? Because that's what the...
It is. Yeah, fantastic
okay,
pronunciation.
That's what your cell phone said, so, you know, you never know.
Yeah, right.
Cell phone says we're great. Thanks, Bodhi. So, yeah, great question. So, in terms of it feeling personal, that's two things. One is that whenever we're attacked, it re-stimulates us. Even the smallest slight that we had in our childhood, that slight will be re-stimulated by someone attacking us. So if you have an aggressive child, if anyone who has an aggressive child, it is crucial that you have regular listening partnerships. Again, I could not have made it with my son. We might have been a disrupted adoption. Not only did I have regular listening partnerships, you know, on a weekly basis, and even some that I could call in the moment for emergency listening time, but I also had in-person listening partnerships where, here in Los Angeles, where I'd get together with my partner and I would have her throw things at me. And my son was doing this thing recently where he would so he's 12 and he's a good 2 inches taller than I. He could practically put his chin on top of my head. And he was doing this thing where when I was when he would get upset and I was trying to set a limit, he would just stand right in front of me, like inches away from me. And it was very scary for me. He wasn't saying anything. He was just more like standing his ground, like, no, I'm not going to do this, you know, but it was very scary for me. And so I, with my in-person listening partner who happens to be taller than I asked her to do that so that I could like rant and rave and yell and, you know, threaten her and, you know, and try to get to whatever it was in my childhood and kind of get it out. So that when my son stands in front of me like that, I could actually be playful about it and I could hug him. You know, I could go, give him a big hug. Instead of, or like drop down on the ground and try to crawl under between his legs instead of getting re-stimulated. So it's crucial that if your child is expressing fear through aggression, that you have a listening partner, regular listening time. Because the other thing is that so here's how Patty explains, the experience of a child who's like, she explained it as they're like caught in the middle of an emotional bad dream. And no, it is not necessary to understand exactly what is creating the fear. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. So when they're in the midst of this emotional bad dream, it feels, first of all, like they're going to die, like they may not make it, right? Mm-hmm. And it also feels like, they lose all sense of time. So there's a feeling of this is never going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they're going to direct that, fight towards the person who is closest to them. And then if things are coming out of their mouth, like my son was, he sort of knew like right where to go that would hurt me. Here's the thing to understand about things that are coming out of somebody's mouth. And this doesn't sound really logical because there are words that are coming out of their mouth. But when they're stuck in that place where the limbic system and even the lower part of the brain, the alarm center, are running the show, we don't have access to language. Not the language that is the logical, reasonable, reasoning language. We just have sort of access to something that's not much higher than grunting or, you know, like, ah, you know. But mm-hmm. but on that will often come out things like, I hate you,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, you're the worst mom ever. Or, you know, if your kid's adopted, you'll get, you're not my real mom,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, but they're not connected to the reasoning part of our brain. They're connected to that alarm center part of our brain, you know. It's almost as if they're screaming, fire, fire, I'm on fire, you know. So... but still, it's very difficult for us to not take that stuff personally unless we're getting listening time.
Yeah.
You know, unless we have some place to go to offload our own feelings. And in fact, what I would often find with my son was that I would have an intense stay listening session with him where I felt like he was actually getting to some of the prenatal trauma or adoption trauma,
mm-hmm.
and he'd come out the other side and I'd have this great kid for about, you know, 3 or 4 days. However, if the next day there was even like a little upset because of the listening session the day before, I was out of gas. I would lose it at the little upset the next day.
Yeah, I know.
I was out of gas.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was really, I realized it was really important for me to get get with my listening partner after I'd had one of those big listening sessions so that I could fill my gas tank back up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And then just one follow-up thing, because the materials talk about getting to the tears.
And I've wondered if he's not quite reaching that part of the process, but sort of, I mean, there can be 30 minutes of just real rage without tears.
Yes.
Is that still productive in terms of his, you know, in terms of his healing?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about stay listening is that, I mean, yes, it's, but I found it was years before I could get to, my son could get to the tears.
Mm.
And then I'll also say, that one of the things about aggression to be mindful of is if you're using the tools for months and months and months and it doesn't seem like there's any movement forward, then it's time to start looking at if there are other environmental or systemic some things that might be affecting the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually found with my son that we had to do some gut healing and some more neurological support to calm down the inflammation in his system before he could get to the sadness that was underneath.
Did you say gut healing?
Gut healing?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got you then.
Because if there is inflammation in this, you know, Patty is just, there is an article that Patty has written, but it's not ready for publication. It's just an area that Patty's starting to speak about, that, you know, if you've been using the tools for a year or so and your child is still having huge problems with aggression, then to start looking at, and I think this is true for all children that have aggression, that the more we can support their nervous system through, like, even just, you know, clean diet and you know, less sugar, no, because we know what that stuff does to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, everything we can do to help their body be well, you know, helps them have less, makes the fact that they don't have any inflammation in their system. So I just share that was our journey, in terms of supporting my son, so that
Great.
He could, you know, access those feelings. But it's very important with stay listening that we not have an agenda. As soon as we have an agenda for our children, it erodes the safety. The same thing would be true in your listening partnership. If you can feel it when your listening partner starts to have an agenda for you, suddenly it doesn't feel safe anymore. And the same thing is true with our children. You know, we want to try to keep them safe. You know, when they're expressing their feelings physically, and the other thing I would say about when they're in that place of meltdown, we've done whole hotel seminars on this, so I'm sure there's some on the website about how to help your child with aggression. I think there's a podcast series. But the other thing I would say is be mindful that you're only setting one limit at a time. And what I mean by that is when my son would start to have a meltdown about, some schoolwork that he had to do and he would throw his clothes on the floor. Well, I'm not in that moment going to remind him to, you know, please pick up his clothes and put him in, you know what I mean? So you just really want to keep in mind what is the over. So for example, so if my son would try to hurt me or hurt the house, yes, then the limit becomes safety. But if he's just tearing up a box of Kleenex, I look at that as that's part of the offloading process. You know, that's part of the getting the feelings out, needing to rip up those Kleenex. So I keep an overall safety limit, but I try not to get, because I found what I was doing was sort of the limit dance where I was like trying to set one limit after another. And then he couldn't get to the feelings because there was always a new limit to bump up against.
Good.
Yeah?
I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah.